Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
According to a new survey, 99% of white evangelicals oppose impeaching President Trump. Jesus said Jesus.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today you'll hear Seth's interview with Willem Dafoe. Then, just for this podcast, Willem takes a few more questions backstage at Studio HG. But first, a closer look.
The president's allies are flailing as they try to defend him in both the impeachment inquiry and the controversy over his decision to abandon the Kurds. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. As he faces an intensifying impeachment inquiry in the House, the president is also dealing with nearly unanimous backlash from both Republicans and Democrats over his decision to abandon our Kurdish allies in Syria, who helped American soldiers fight ISIS. And yet, even after being accused of a tragic betrayal by our Kurdish allies, yesterday Trump patted himself on the back during a speech in which he announced that he was lifting sanctions on Turkey.
Today's announcement validates our course of action with Turkey, that only a couple of weeks ago was scorned. And now people are saying, wow, what a great outcome. Congratulations.
No one is saying that. But if they did, judging from your cadence, they were super high. Wow. He sounds like a local mattress salesman. Wow, what a great deal. Second, anytime Trump says people are saying, those people do not exist. Trump uses people are saying the same way guys use my friend has a problem when they ask their doctors for Cialis. Now, Trump says he doesn't think we should be fighting wars in the Middle East, but let's just be clear about something. Donald Trump is not and has never been an anti-war president. He just pretends to be one. All he cares about is what you can do for him personally. And reporters who actually talked to the Kurds on the ground yesterday confirmed that they definitely were not saying, wow, what a great outcome.
They're not listening to President Trump anymore. He has totally broken their trust. They think that President Trump has betrayed them and that he is effectively a joke, that he doesn't keep his word. The one people they did trust was the United States, but now U.S. troops have been forced to leave. They're seeing signs from the Kurds saying, we love you, we still appreciate the role that you, the U.S. troops, did, but your president betrayed us.
And that's what Trump does. He betrays everybody. It doesn't matter who you are or what you do for him. As soon as you're not useful to him, he'll discard you. I mean, just look at how many of his former aides he's attacked or thrown under the bus. In fact, I'm pretty sure Steve Bannon still lives under one. And just take Rudy Giuliani, Trump's personal lawyer and perhaps his most vocal and consistent defender. After two of Rudy's associates, Lev and Igor, were arrested, and it was reported, that's their real names, it was reported that Rudy himself was under criminal investigation. Here's what Trump had to say about his longtime relationship with his friend and ally.
Is Rudy Giuliani still your personal
referee? Well, I don't know. I haven't spoken to Rudy. I spoke to him yesterday briefly. He's a very good attorney, and he has been my attorney. Yeah, sure.
You know it's bad when you keep changing tenses. Was he my lawyer? I don't know. Is he? Yeah, I mean, he has been. Will he be in the future? Sure. But this is what Trump does. The minute you're a burden on him, he'll dump you. In fact, now that Rudy is under criminal investigation, Trump makes him sit outside when they fly on Air Force One. But this is Trump in his essence. Everything with him is a transaction. The Trump who betrays his allies as soon as they're no longer useful to him is also the same guy who tried to orchestrate a corrupt quid pro quo with Ukraine for his own personal political benefit. This behavior is obviously corrupt and illegal, and we already have all the evidence. In fact, Trump and his aides have basically confessed to all of it, so Republicans are running out of ways to defend it. For example, earlier this month, Trump insisted that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell had personally assured him that his phone call with the president of Ukraine, in which he famously said the words, "I would like you to do us a favor," was perfect.
I read Mitch McConnell's statement yesterday, and he read my phone call. And as you know, he put out a statement that said that was the most innocent phone call he's read. And I spoke to him about it, too. He read my phone call with the president of Ukraine, Mitch McConnell. He said that was the most innocent phone call.
Once again, he can't even mimic actual human syntax when he lies. No human talks like that. And for our purposes, just go along with the idea that Mitch McConnell is a human, even though he is clearly at least 60% dried apple doll. Seriously, just imagine, if you can, the most innocent phone call you've ever witnessed. You've never watched your spouse order takeout and said, "Wow, honey, that was the most innocent phone call I've ever seen. You ordered that pizza without murdering anyone." But still, Trump said he spoke to McConnell, and McConnell told him it was an innocent phone call. There's just one problem. McConnell doesn't seem to remember it that way.
The president has said that you told him that his phone call with the Ukrainian president was perfect and innocent. Do you believe that the president has handled this Ukrainian situation perfectly?
We've not had any conversations on that subject.
So he was lying about that?
You have to ask him. I don't recall any conversations with the president about that phone call.
Wow, even Mitch McConnell won't back him up now. By the end of this whole thing, Republicans are just going to start pretending they don't even know who Donald Trump is.
That man was the president? I just assumed it was a Halloween decoration meant to scare away pranksters on mischief night.
The problem for Republicans is that the facts are so clear that there's nothing they can say or do to defend them. For example, those words Trump said on the phone call, "I would like you to do us a favor," would seem like a classic quid pro quo. But this week, Trump booster Sean Hannity tried out a new, even dumber defense. It's not a crime because that's just how Trump talks.
By the way, it's important to remember one more thing about the president's phone call with Ukraine. When the president said, "I'd like you to do us a favor." Okay, well, it's a favor. Okay, there were no strings attached. Zero quid pro quo. And let's be clear. The term "do us a favor," well, we all have go-to phrases. I'll say you know a lot. The president uses them all the time.
That's your argument? That saying "do us a favor" to a foreign leader is equivalent to you saying "you know"? You have to understand. Trump says "do us a favor" the way Valley Girls say "like" or how Jesse Pinkman says "bitch" all the time. It doesn't mean he's a criminal. That's just how he talks. Also, he's a criminal. Republicans have also tried insisting that there was no quid pro quo because the quo in this case would be the military aid Trump was holding up, and it would only be a quid pro quo if Ukraine knew that aid was being delayed. Here's one Republican congressman responding to shocking testimony from a key witness in the impeachment inquiry this week on Fox News.
Neither he or any other witness has provided testimony that the Ukrainians were aware that military aid was being withheld. You can't have a quid pro quo with no quo.
That's how dumb these guys are. They've gone from "there was no quid pro quo" to "there was a quid pro, but no quo." Soon they're going to try "there was a quid and there was a quo, but we are definitely not pros." But then that argument also, it also fell through when it was reported that Ukraine did know the aid was being held up. So then Trump's allies tried yet another new argument. It might have been wrong, but it wasn't a crime. Here's Trump's former acting attorney general, Matt Whitaker, making that argument on Fox News this week. Again, this is a man who was in charge of the Justice Department.
I'm a former prosecutor, and what I know is this is a perfect time for a preliminary hearing where you would say, "Show us your evidence. What evidence of a crime do you have? I mean, the Constitution, you know, sort of abuse of power is not a crime.
Yeah, it is. Also, you look like abuse of power should be your wrestling name.
Please welcome to the ring, abuse of power. He's ripping up the Constitution.
So because they've totally run out of arguments, Republicans have now been reduced to physically obstructing the impeachment inquiry. For example, yesterday we told you that House Republicans had orchestrated a dumb stunt in which they held a press conference and then stormed into a secure hearing room in order to interfere with the deposition. The congressman who led the stunt, Matt Gaetz, compared it to the movie 300. Now, in case you forgot, here's what that movie was like.
This is Sparta!
Okay, so now let's see those Republicans storm the hearing in the way they described was like the movie 300.
We're gonna go and see if we can get inside. So let's see if we can get in.
This is Sparta! So... That wasn't 300, that was like three. Makes your publicity stunt a lot less dramatic when you have to shuffle along like you're in a crowded mall at Christmas. Look at these guys, they all look like they're headed to the bathroom during an intermission at a Broadway show. Now, it turns out Trump himself had advanced knowledge of this stunt and approved of it, but it turns out the stunt was even dumber than we thought because a lot of those Republicans were actually allowed to be in the room they were supposedly storming.
A bunch of them made a big show of storming the secure facility in the Capitol where impeachment investigators are deposing witnesses. We should note that some of these folks are on the committees doing the investigating, so they don't need to storm the proceedings because some were already allowed inside and had been inside before.
Guys, you can't storm a room you're allowed to be in. That's not storming, that's entering. You storm the beaches of Normandy, you go to the Jersey Shore. We've taken Point Pleasant, boys! Even Republicans are having trouble defending Trump's corrupt behavior now because the facts are clear and support for impeachment is rising in the polls. If the House completes its investigation and officially impeaches Trump, I bet at least a few Americans will take a rip off a bong and say,
wow, what a great outcome. Congratulations.
This has been A Closer Look.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Our guest tonight is an Oscar-nominated actor you know from Platoon, A Shadow of the Vampire, and The Florida Project. You can see him in Motherless Brooklyn in theaters November 1st, and The Lighthouse, which is in select theaters now and nationwide Friday. Please welcome back to the show, Willem Dafoe, everyone. How are you?
I'm good.
So happy you're back. This movie is a wonderful film. It is delightfully insane.
Okay.
And as premises go, it's fairly easy to explain what plot of this film is.
Yes, it's very simple. Two lighthouse keepers, one old, one young, played by myself and Rob Pattinson, go to a lighthouse. We're supposed to be there for 4 weeks and then get picked up. Weather turns bad, we don't get picked up. Run out of food, start to drink. We never liked each other in the first place. Things start to happen. Things don't go well. Or, as the director says, nothing good comes from two men being trapped in a giant phallus.
That's true. That is a very famous adage. Yeah. It is the characters in the film are going through terrible conditions of weather. And you, obviously, you were in Nova Scotia, is that what you said?
Nova Scotia, yeah.
And you lived in a shack?
Well, let's call it a fisherman's cottage.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, that's the way they sell it on Airbnb, yeah.
Yeah, it was rustic.
Yeah.
But I loved it. And it wasn't like a method thing. It was just close to the set. I knew we were going to be working every day. It's basically two actors.
Right.
So I thought, you know, let's keep the life simple for this one.
And was it, at the end of it, were you very happy that you had done that?
Yeah, very much.
That's
very
great.
Because it was cool. Because I'd wake up, the first thing I'd think of was the weather.
Yeah.
And the weather was a huge character in this movie because we were out there.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's connected to the story.
You your own beard in the film, yes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But
it's a good one. I'm quite proud of it.
Yeah, it really is.
I watch the movie and say, wow, I grew that.
So you focus on that more than even your acting choices. You're like, man, I crushed the beard.
Yeah. Well, the beard's a good place to start.
Yeah.
Because it transforms you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So real beard, but fake teeth.
Fake teeth. My teeth aren't great. But, you know, you look at pictures of these guys in the late 19th century, they all had funky teeth. So it was a fun thing to play with. And then it affects how you speak. And all those little external things really help you to get there to pretend.
Yeah, know? I would imagine. Having a nice few things that you don't have to completely come from internal. But you can actually...
they take you away from yourself, give you new impulses.
But this is a true story about you. You lost front teeth when you were young, and your dentist gave you advice that I had never heard before.
This guy, who? Yeah, I I got my two front teeth knocked out by a baseball when I was a kid. You know.
And they were like, you should act.
And they didn't come in for the longest time. So when I was quite old, I still didn't have two front teeth. I mean, I heard all the time, you know, all I want for Christmas is my two front teeth.
Yeah.
So I my parents took me to a dentist, like, what's going on here? Are these teeth ever going to come in? And the guy said, yeah, but he's going to massage his gums. And I thought, how do you massage your gums? So he said, go to a pet shop, get a plastic dog bone, and just when you're watching TV, kind of massage.
Was he working out of the back of a van?
Well, the only thing I remember, I've never seen so much dental work in a person's mouth.
As his?
Yes.
Oh, that's really funny. Yeah, he was like, you can't afford this, but go on down to the pet store. Last time you were here, we were talking about the wonderful film Florida Project.
Yeah.
And there's a great scene in that movie where you basically interact with birds.
Yes.
Which was a little, those were not actor birds. Those were just birds who wandered onto set.
Yeah, they crashed our set.
But this, there is some genuinely great bird acting.
Great bird acting, and you know, most of the cast of Seagulls just showed up every day because we had food around. But there are characters in the movie as well.
Yeah, the Seagulls play a big role in the legends.
Yeah, and we had to get classically trained British Seagulls. Okay. And the thing was, each one could do a particular... They were actually rescues. They couldn't be returned to nature.
Okay.
So each one had a specific behavior. Like, one was good at picking, and the other one was good at, you know, squawking. But
And then they go back to their trailer and be like, you know, I can also pick. I'm talking to my agent being like, why am I always the squawking?
But they're so good.
They're really good.
Yeah, I'll work with them again.
Yeah. your early career started here in New York.
Yep.
New York in the 70s.
Yep.
And one of your early jobs, I'm always fascinated by early jobs, especially in New York. You were a nude model for an acting, like an artist class.
We call it a life model.
A life model.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
What was that like?
You get naked and sit there.
For how long? What's the length of time?
It's a long time. I mean, sometimes half an hour. I did it for a sculpture class, so you got to really...
And then hold the position as well.
But,
I mean, you're very good.
Yeah, you know, and that was I enjoyed that.
Was it, when they were done, were you ever curious as to see, you know, what they had kind of come up with?
Absolutely. And, you know, what was it called? It's on 8th Street. It still exists. It's a studio school.
Okay.
And their big thing was they believed that it's really good to go from life models. And this was sculpture class. And some of the things, it was a student place, right? So they weren't quite maestros, you know?
Yeah.
So I'd look at these things and was like, really? I look like that?
That does really add to the level of stress as an artist to know that the person you're actually sculpting is going to then walk over and say, uh-huh.
Yeah, they were cool. They were cool.
What was, you live downtown in New York?
I did.
There you go. Wait, I mean, it must be so different for you now.
Oh, God. For a while, I first lived in the East Village. I used to live off of Thompson Square Park, and I saw some incredible things. You know, it was a different New York then.
Yeah.
One night, I'm sitting out on my fire escape, and I see two guys walking in with shotguns. I thought, oh, they're going to hunt squirrels, I guess.
Yeah, it's a very different time.
Yeah, very different.
It is always such a pleasure to have you here. Congratulations on the film. Thank you so much. Willem Dafoe, everybody, The Lighthouse is in select theaters now and nationwide Friday. Motherless Brooklyn is in theaters November 1st.
Hi, this is Henry from Late Night, here with Willem Dafoe. Willem, thank you so much for doing this.
Yes, yes. I'm happy to be here.
So, you've got two movies out right now. You've done about 130 movies, according to IMDb.
Yes.
Does constantly working on a film kind of work the muscle and make you feel more comfortable when you get in a set? Or is it complicated that you're juggling 10 characters at once?
No, you know, one at a time. I think it does make you more comfortable. And also, when you get in a tight spot or you're frustrated or you're lost or you're feeling insecure, you recognize that and say, ah, it's okay. This will pass and turn into something else. So right. I think it makes you a little easier, a little more philosophical. Mm-hmm. I think back when I started out, you don't have, you know, not just the experience, but you're more worried. You feel like every film is going to make or destroy you, you know. So you get more self-conscious. But after a while, you think, yeah, you win some, you lose some.
Yeah. When did you get to that point that you kind of thought, oh, I think I can make a career out of this. I think I'll be all right.
It's a little bit like that. You know, people always say, what was the, oh, my, I want to be an actor moment? I never had that. I kind of bumped along and, you know, followed situations and people and things. And then after doing it for a little while, I said, my God, I guess this is it. This is what I'm supposed to do. And I'm an actor.
You were saying, we were chatting just a little bit before we started this, that people come up to you and I was saying I love Florida Project,
right.
One of my all-time favorite films. And you know, you hear about Florida Project, but when you've done so many films, what do you hear about most often?
Well, it's all over the map, you know. It really depends on the person. I mean, and certain people go through different periods of their life where they watch a lot of films and then they don't.
Right.
You know, and you can really tell by their taste and what they've seen and what their take on you is.
Yeah.
And also, I think, also, people tend to identify what they first saw you in. I mean, those tend to be not always the first thing, but the one that grabbed them. And even if you do something down the line, it's always, you know, it's a first love thing.
Yeah.
Or a first love, I don't know.
You can say
but
love.
A first,
say it. Say first love.
Attraction
a
or
first
something.
First attraction of That's right.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
I think it works.
Okay.
Do you watch your films later? Like, do you see them on TV? Do you stop and watch when you see them?
You know, I always watch them after they're made because I'm curious. I want to see how they turned out. And also, if you're doing press, you want to know what the hell you're talking about.
that would make it easier.
But other than that, not so much because, you know, you got to let it go.
Yeah.
Even if you like it, you know, when you watch your films also, it's very hard to see them. You always go back. It's always like watching a home movie and remembering the making of it.
Right.
It's an associative thing, you know?
Uh-huh. When you're on set rehearsing, how do you prepare for the... You've done theater, but this is not theater. How do you kind of prepare for the day's work? Because I know on The Lighthouse, you and Robert, you prepared separately. Mm-hmm. So what's your kind of routine to get into a character?
Different characters, different routines, different
sense,
process.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really that simple.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's usually the one thing that's always kind of there is it's always a physical approach, always a task-oriented approach.
Yeah. You bring such amazing physicality to
thanks.
Your work. Did you know early on that would be kind of an engine for you? You're a tool?
It's, you know, so what much of what I am as an actor was formed. I still do theater, but when I had a company, I was part of a company and we were working every day. Mm. And that really formed my approach. And the approach is much less psychological and less an interpretation and more like a dancer, you know. It's about applying yourself to a score.
Yeah. we were just laughing because our photographer, Lloyd, just dropped off some photos of you. And last time you were here, one of the photos was you doing a Mick Jagger impression under Joe, because you said sometimes people mistake you for Mick Jagger and you've got to go up and
actually, it seems like an incredible thing. I guess I'm just a old skinny white guy, but I always get a little offended because although he's great.
There's an age difference.
There's an age difference.
Yeah.
And I think, wow, I gotta, you know, eat some ice cream or something, pack on some pounds or something.
I never thought I would be able to use this in conversation correctly, but you literally had moves like Jagger. When you got up on our show last time and did an impression of him, it was incredibly impressive.
You know, and that's an impression of an impression.
Because right.
It's usually the woman that comes up and says, Mick Jagger! Mick Jagger! And I'm copying her, copying Mick. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Well, thank you so much for being here. It's such a pleasure chatting with you. Congrats on both films.
Great. Thank you.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.